Interview with John Patterson, Patterson, former governor of Alabama, July 12th, 1974, in Montgomery.
There's no planning agency in the state?
No, there'd be some of them might tell you what that is, but there is none. There's nobody giving any real thought to the overall picture of state government. In other words, where are we, where have we been, where are we going, where should we go? Is this program good? Should we have it? Should we change it? Is it doing what it's supposed to be doing? No. It's like a ship at sea without a rudder and without a pilot, and occasionally it blows up on a reef and they call the legislature in a special session to get it afloat again, and it's just more money to put it back afloat again. That's about the way it's run. The last governmental reorganization in Alabama, and I think this is generally true everywhere, maybe New York is an exception. The last governmental reorganization here was 1939, and they did do a good job then.
So how many state agencies and departments are there now?
Oh, God, damn. There's a book of all of them. There's 120, over 120 separate boards and commissions.
Are these all appointed by the governor?
Oh, no. Some of them are elected. Some of them are appointed by the governor. Some are appointed by people other than the governor. Every state's faced the same problem. Of course, the federal government's faced the same problem, too. Just so big, you know. You know, it's not complicated. If it was complicated, we wouldn't be in trouble. But it's not complicated. It's just voluminous and not very well organized.
Do you think this new legislature, having a new legislature in effect, as a result of reapportionment, creates any potential for reorganization of state government, modernization?
I hadn't thought about that much, but my judgment is right now that it probably won't make any difference. I don't see any real change in the reapportionment of the legislature along the line of the one-man, one-vote formula. There are a few studies that have been made of this, and I haven't seen them, but Dr. Bowling down at Troy told me that he had seen some of them. There are a few where other states have already done this, and that they had concluded that there was no change. We're going to have an unusual legislature next time, no question about that. We're going to have only about 20% of the House are going to be back. So you're going to have a relatively inexperienced House of Representatives. Now you're going to have a little bit more experienced Senate. A good many people from the House are going over to the Senate. So I figure half the Senate will be new, and probably 80% of the House. But you know, when they're new and green like that, they're easier to manipulate. This is an inexperienced
right.
House or inexperienced legislature than the governor. Indeed, even the interested groups that lobby the legislature would have a better opportunity to influence them. We're gonna have a lot of young guys in the legislature just out of college, and these don't necessarily make good legislators.
There's no cadre of veteran reform type members
gonna be in the legislature. If they are, I don't know about it. Now the major changes, of course, are going to be the fact you're going to have more people in there from the industrial areas of the state, heavily populated industrial areas. I don't know what this will mean, really. In Alabama, you see, you take the Black Belt section of Alabama, which lies just from Montgomery south of here across the state, black because of the soil. You're familiar with that.
Right.
This is the area where that was really affected by the Voting Rights Act. When prior to that, throughout the entire history of Alabama, except during the Reconstruction period, this was controlled predominantly by the whites, the wealthy landowners, and simply the whites. And even when I was governor, I had to contend with this. you had a county like Lowndes down here with less than 10,000 people, with two House members and a senator, see, had almost the same representation that Birmingham had, you see. In every showdown vote in the legislature over a controversial issue, and one would be anything dealing with Texas, the Black Belt rural legislator would invariably line up with the Birmingham legislators, the big city legislators. So the guy you get from the big city in the legislature, chances are, is going to be in industry-oriented or business-oriented. This has been my experience with it. The people in the big cities just don't take a real interest in who they send to the legislature. And they usually only send, they send new ones every time. You don't get reelected many times in Alabama if you come from a big city. But that rural legislator gets sent back over and over and over again, and he has tremendous influence in the legislature. The biggest major change is the blacks. And I don't know how many yet's going to be there, but I figure there'll be about 19 or 20 blacks. Three senators out of 35 will possibly be black, and there'll be about something like 17 or 18 House members out of 105 will be black. Now, what this means, I have no idea. I just don't know what this will mean. Now, it's interesting that most of the blacks will come from the Black Belt.
And, so there will be a number of rural blacks.
That's right.
More or less.
That's right. Now,
see, Georgia has about that number, but all of them come from urban areas. No, there's not a single black in the Georgia legislature.
They'll be about evenly divided. They'll be about evenly divided in Alabama from the rural areas. Of course, you see, you take Macon County, where Tuskegee Institute is. That's 85% black, you see. Now, they'll have two House members this time. They'll be black, of course. Greene County will have a House member. It'll be black. Some of those counties, you know, have as much as 85% black. And up until the Voting Rights Act, most of them couldn't vote, you see. And all of a sudden, just overnight, as a result of that mass registration with federal registrars, the whole power, political power, just changed hands in those counties. And now, in most of those counties now, they're all blacks in the courthouse. Greene County is a typical example of that.
How significant is this defeat that Governor Wallace suffered in naming a new chairman of the Democratic Party?
Well, of course, this means as far as his, you know, ability to perform, nothing.
Right.
Yeah. When I got elected governor, I didn't fool with that thing until the last minute. And somebody said, well, now the governor is the titular head of the party, and he ought to control the committee. And the chairman controls the committee. The chairman at that time had more power than he has now. But the chairman can call meetings or not call meetings, and he has, you know, the gavel and all that. And he also controls the money, see. And I never had any reason to want to control it. And even if you got the chairman in your pocket, you might not control the thing, you see. Well, I said, well, if the governor's supposed to have the chairman in his pocket and name the chairman and control the committee, and then we sure ought to do it because we want to do whatever the government's supposed to do. So I began to look to see who all was elected to that committee. And I found that a lot of them were people who are engaged in businesses that are very sensitive to the state. Asphalt business, concrete pipe business, insurance business, things like that. And so I set about to try to influence them as much as I could to get them to elect the chairman that I wanted. And man, I had a knockdown, drag-out fight about that thing, and finally won it by one vote. And the patronage and appointments that we had to make as a result of getting that thing done was tremendous, and we never recovered from it. And then after I got the chairman elected, it didn't do me one bit of good. But as far as I know, I never needed the committee, and the committee could have never done anything for me, and I don't even know whether I controlled it or not, to tell you the truth. It was a worthless thing to have engaged in that fight for me. And I see it the same way for him. I mean, why in the world that they wanted to, you know, get involved in that thing, I don't know. Because even if he'd have won, he wouldn't have had anything. it would have been of no value to him whatsoever. They're not going to decide who's going to go to that convention. They got to be elected separately, you see. So I thought it was, without winning it, it was a mistake to fool with. And to have won it, he would have had to pay the price to have won it. And it wouldn't have been worth it. I don't mean to cast any aspersions against anybody, but there are people on that committee that you could get their vote, but it would cost you. It would cost you state business and things of this kind. So, now, George had never done that kind of thing. He just not prone to thinking that way. He could have won he could have won it, but I'm satisfied he wasn't willing to pay the price to win it.
He apparently thought he was going to win it, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he was misled by some of his people who are rather naive about some things.
Does that suggest he's got weak staff?
No. I don't think George has ever really fooled with the committee. He's gone his separate way, and he sort of left that thing alone. And it never has really been a friendly committee with him. That is, the leadership of the committee. When he went the third party route, he just completely left it alone. See, and he's got some enemies on the committee, no question about that. The committee is divided between the loyal National Democratic bunch, that's the old Hill Sparkman people, you know. And then on the other end of that thing, you've got the old Dixiecrats, you see. And the conservative, rural, citizens' council type on the other end of that thing. So, and George just never has fooled with it. He never has. And not since the 1958 convention in Chicago has George fooled with that committee. And I think he just sort of let some of his people tinker with it without any real direction from him. I think this is my guess. They asked me to check out one person, and I called this person. Then I called this person's close relative as a friend of mine. And I was advised that no way would this person vote for Mr. Wallace's choice, that this person was going to vote for Mr. Vance, that no way would this person stay away from the meeting and not go at all, but would be there. And that there was some resentment that this person was not was asked in the ninth inning, that the last out in the ninth inning, to consider changing the vote. And so I reported back exactly that. I said, you can't count that vote. That vote's against you. That vote's going to be there, and there ain't nothing you can do. Too late. And I believe, though, that they had some people that were reporting back to them and giving them information that was not correct, and I think they were misled. So that's what I think. A lot of people, you know, will make you think that they're going to vote for you in hopes of trying to, at some last minute, work out some accommodation. You know, why does a person serve on a committee like that where there's no money, no pay, and really no honor? Nobody even knows who they are outside of Mr. Vance, the chairman.
And no function.
That's right. Why? You take now some of them do it simply because they like to think, they like to dabble in politics. Some of them have money, some of them like to go to these meetings. They take their family and their kids and they go to these meetings. They like to go to Washington. They like to just be in it, you see. But there are a lot of them on that thing that ain't not in it for that purpose. And you take a list of them and you see what they do, and you can pretty well tell what it would take to control it. I'm talking to you frankly, man. I'm telling you what I think the truth is. And I had a fight with it one time, and I won by one vote. And after I won, I found out I didn't have a damn thing. Nothing. And I went to the 1960 convention and supported John Kennedy and worked like hell for him out there, and I got no help at all out of the State Democratic Committee. All Alabama's congressmen and senators found business elsewhere. The senators went overseas, and Sparkman went to Japan, and and they wouldn't come nowhere near Los Angeles. And they were all of them were perfectly willing for John to be the titular head of the party and have all the responsibility when they were trying to nominate a Catholic president.
What's the secret of George?
But let me go back and complete this matter. Did it hurt George Wallace to have got the blame by some people for having lost that fight with the committee? Probably in the eyes of the press and some people who are not knowledgeable, you know, yes. But as far as having hurt him in any way or hindered him in any way, no, I wouldn't think so. He better concern himself, though, with the delegates to the convention, though. But that race is yet to be run, so.
You about the midterm convention or the 76th
convention? No, I'm talking about the 76th convention. If he goes to the 76th convention as a serious contender, and I think he will, then I think he ought to have the solid backing of the Alabama delegation. Yeah, pledged to the right to the end of the line until he personally relieves them. And he can get it, but he'll have to work at it some. It won't be easy. And not because they're against him politically, but simply because a lot of them are just looking to feather their nest somewhere.
Will he be able to do that with black delegates to the convention?
I would think so from Alabama. Yeah, I would think so. George is very much of a liberal. The Negroes don't dislike George. He's never really done anything against them. I would figure they'd probably dislike me more than they would him.
Why is that?
Well, I was the Attorney General of the state during the integration battles, and I fought the NAACP and others to uphold the constitutionality of Alabama's segregation laws, and they won't ever forget that. So all you have to do is go back and pull out the clippings of those days. See, Governor Allman of Virginia was Attorney General of Virginia at that time too. And Allman and I teamed up and worked together. And the big legal battle, you know, was fought in Virginia, really. But we had a fight here, a considerable battle here. And it fell my lot to represent the state and the public agencies in those fights. And our policy was one of non-confrontation and decentralization of control, to force them to take us on a broad front rather than foresighting on us with just single litigation. And we were able to get the NAACP put out of business in Alabama for a violation of our corporate domestication statutes. And for 7 years, we kept the NAACP completely out of business in Alabama. And they went to the United States Supreme Court, finally got admitted to Alabama again. And it was a bitter battle. And but for this reason, they wouldn't... their leadership, but not don't like me, and it's a different feeling toward me than toward a fellow like George. He's never done anything against them at all. In fact, he's really done a lot for them. In fact, you know, when I ran against George Wallace in '58 and beat him, and the primary reason that I beat him was because he was considered soft on the race question at that time. That's the primary reason. It's hard to believe it.
What's he doing for blacks?
Oh, Lord. Well, he gets the credit or the blame being governor for whatever happens. And of course, during the time that he has served as governor of Alabama, we have come from almost no integration to full integration of everything.
But that's not because of George Wallace.
Not because of the federal courts.
Well, you can't really say whether it was because of George Wallace. He really didn't lay down any real impediments to it.
Could he have?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he could.
Against the courts?
He could have delayed it. I think it probably could have been delayed. However, I think it ultimately would have happened, you understand? And I'm not saying that I could have done any better than he did. the same thing would probably happen to me, and probably worse. But what I'm saying is that in 63 there was a change of policy from one of non-confrontation, talking about legally now, and of decentralization of control, to one of confrontation and centralization of control, which resulted in the federal, in the Justice Department and the various Negro organizations being able to bring about integration statewide with a very few lawsuits. And prior to that, our policy was, we knew we could never win legally. So rather than go to court and get decisions that you didn't want, the best thing to do was to avoid decisions altogether. So we went to every extreme to avoid getting involved in litigation with them, and it worked for a long time. It worked for 8 years. Simply a delay, though. So. But in 63, if you remember, the policy was became one of drawing the line and confrontation. And when the governor got involved in the actual administration of the schools in Macon County, it brought on one lawsuit where by one stroke of the pen, the federal judge integrated every school in Alabama. Brought it to an end. So. I'm not saying the same thing wouldn't have happened if I'd have been governor at that time. I just don't know. I don't know. But honestly, I believe that the people, that the Negro citizens of the state, have a different view of him than they would a fellow like me. Simply because every program that he can take credit for, with some pride, has benefited the blacks. School program, his trade school program, the junior college program, so-called Wallace Act, where they sell municipal bonds for the construction of plants for new industries, has created tremendous employment for blacks. Outside of the Selma Bridge incident and the Birmingham riots, really, and of course that door stand at Tuscaloosa was purely an act, of course, as you well know, the foregone conclusion was going to happen over there that day. I don't believe the average Negro holds that against George Washington. I don't think so. I think he could get the Negro delegates from Alabama. I think he got a pretty good Negro vote last time. He probably got 15-20% of them in the last election. What makes a fellow like Johnny Ford at Tuskegee endorse him? Don't help George everywhere to have that fellow endorse him. But he did. You got to put some weight to that, you know.
Why do you think he endorsed him?
I think he's just a practical politician. You know, the Negroes are no better or no worse than the whites when it comes to politics. They're all the same, really. I mean, I think the Negro citizens of the state are going to play their politics just about like the whites play theirs. I think he did it because he thought that was the winner and that he wanted to be with the winning side. And he has no real reason to be against him, really. George Wallace is not a racist, in my judgment, at all. Absolutely not. I could never buy that. Very much of a liberal.
What in his record? We keep hearing that he's a liberal, but what in his record reflects that?
Well, of course, you've got to separate your racial thing out
right,
of the economics.
Separating the racial thing from it.
Oh, well, I think, of course...
His tax programs haven't been liberal. I mean, they've been pretty regressive. He increased the sales tax, and as I understand, he did put a liberal utility tax.
You increase the taxes to get more money for schools and welfare programs and various public assistance programs. Isn't that a sort of a populist approach to things?
Could depend on where the taxes come from, wouldn't it?
Oh, no, I don't think you can...
I mean, you know, bumpers in Arkansas increased the income tax, made it more progressive. You know, went from 5% to 7%. Askew in Florida put on a corporate income tax.
Of course, George only increased the sales tax one time, from a 3% to 4%. Of course, at that time, nearly everybody was already up to 4%. But he took that 1 cent increase and put it in education and exclusively built these junior colleges with it. And I think, of course, I agree with you that Alabama's tax system is not fair today. But the reason it's not, and the reason it's not fair is that the sales type taxes are out of line to some extent with the income taxes and property taxes. But I don't think you can blame George Wallace for that. I really don't believe you can blame George Wallace for that.
No, I'm not thinking of blame.
I do believe, of course, I know how hard it is to try to increase the income tax and to do anything with the property tax. This is a very difficult thing to do, as you well know, with a legislature that is oriented toward business, which is how ours has been. You know, the federal court, we are now under a federal court order to reassess our property for tax purposes. And if that is done, and done in accordance with the present formula, then Alabama, in my judgment, will have a fair tax structure. It will increase the property taxes by about $100 million a year, which will make the property type taxes about equal to the sales type taxes. And I think that's a pretty good test as to what a reasonable tax structure would be. George had always had a reputation of being a liberal. You know, I consider the Wallace Act, which is the municipal bond law for the construction of industries, plants, and things.
What does that do? Just provide state bonding authority?
It provides that a municipality can float a bond issue for the purpose of acquiring property and building a plant and leasing it to a private company to operate an industry. And at the end of the company would pay the rent, which would amortize the cost of the bond. And at the end of the period, the plant would belong to the industry. You see.
Does it place the full faith and credit of the state behind the bond?
No. The municipality creates a municipal borrowing authority, and of course, the only pledge behind the bond, of course, would be the rents from the
revenue bond.
Yeah, it's a revenue type bond. Yeah. They sell very well, and this has been a great boon in Alabama to industry, and it's interesting that George Wallace introduced that into the legislature in 1945 when he was a freshman legislator and just back from the airport. He'd always had a reputation of being a liberal.
Doesn't that act, though, in effect, remove the burden from industry having to pay property tax until the bonds are retired?
The property, it doesn't relieve them from having to pay property tax, but they can get, our statutes provide that the governor and the revenue commissioner, who's appointed by the governor, can give a new industry or a 10-year exemption from ad valorem property taxes. And as a matter, a routine matter, they do that. That's true. Of course, the municipal bonds are tax-free bonds, too.
But how about if a municipality builds a plant, floats a bond, buys the land, builds a plant, what are the life of these bonds usually? Is there a general, or does it vary?
Usually about 15 or 20 years.
Let's say it runs 15 years. The plant is paying, in effect, paying rent that pays off, amortizes the bond issue.
Yeah.
Well, during that 15-year period, the plant is actually owned by the municipality.
That's correct.
So
yeah.
The plant during that 15-year, I mean, the industry during that 15 years is not paying any taxes
either.
That's
right? Correct, yeah. They could get an exemption even if they owned it. Yeah, that's true. You're right about that.
You say he's not a racist, but today we're hearing the comment that he's changing from being a racist because of a whole series of incidents and whatnot. The fact that race was not used as a campaign issue in 1974.
The reason I say that is that I don't think that George Wallace in his entire life has ever had any strong feeling about the race question. And I think he would just as soon, I put myself in the same category, I just as soon we never had the problem in the first place. I've never had any trouble associating with blacks in any capacity in the Army. I put 10 years in the service. I never had any trouble anywhere. Wherever I am, I live by the customs and traditions of the people where I am. You know, I never have any problems. I think George Wallace is the same way. George Wallace never was a segregationist simply because he thought that was the right thing to be, you know. No. I think he supported segregation in his campaigns simply because had he not, there would have been no way to have gotten elected at the time. I think it's purely political. I really believe that. And when he was circuit judge down there, he was quite lenient with Negroes. He really was. And this was used against him in our campaign. Question about it. I think Georgia is mighty glad, probably mighty glad, to see this fight coming to an end. And it is. It is. And I know I am. I'm glad it's over, too. And I think if the black citizen now really participates and pulls his load and everything, then he'll have substantial improvement in the near future, even more. Of course, it worries me sometimes that you get splinter organizations like Cashin's outfit in Huntsville and the Reeves Alabama Democratic Conference, and what they're trying to do is to have their own political organization in the state and be in the Democratic Party at the same time. You know, got one foot in the party and one foot out. I don't think this helps the Negro cause at all politically. I think these guys hurt it rather than help. But
do you think race as an issue has been removed from statewide politics?
No, I don't mean that now. I think that's still an issue, but I don't think it is the issue that it used to be.
How is it still an issue? Still open, overt sort of thing, or is it?
No, I think the race issue became an issue in the Wallace Brewer runoff. Rumors spread around that as soon as Brewer was elected governor, that the reason that Joe Reed was supporting Brewer for governor against Wallace, as soon as Brewer got in office, he was going to appoint Reed the president of Livingston State College, this kind of stuff. And in certain parts of the state, this would have a great effect. You see, there are still certain parts of Alabama where there is a feeling of hostility between the races, no question about it. And if a candidate wants to take advantage of that, and he can in some way, then we'll continue to have this racial problem.
Well, will he still continue to do it out in the open?
No.
Or will he use code to...
No, I don't think he'll do it in the open anymore. No, sir. I don't think so. I think it hurt a fellow to do it in the open. I really do.
Sure. Why is that? Because of attitudes have changed?
Yeah, I think so. Now, you take a county like... Tallapoosa County, which is the reason I know Tallapoosa. I came from there, and I have a farm, and I spend every weekend there. It's about 40% black. Now, when the integration of the schools came in Tallapoosa County, everybody just raised hell right up to the last hour, you know, threatened all kinds of dire consequences. And when the morning came and everybody had to integrate the school, they just went ahead and did it and never said another word about it. Now, since that time, it had worked very well. There had been, frankly, no instances of difficulty or trouble. In fact, people are mighty glad that the battle is over. They don't have to put up with all that anymore. You don't have to always concern yourself or be on edge about some black sitting in a cafe somewhere. All this has just come about almost overnight in Alabama. If you go to lunch today and they pick any restaurant downtown you want to go in, you go in there, you'll find about 15-20% or maybe more blacks sitting around in there eating just like everybody else. Nobody pays any attention to it anymore.
Did you anticipate that change would occur that rapidly?
No, I didn't. I sure did.
How do you explain that?
I explain it because, this way, that deep down inside, the average white person really liked the Negro and did not like the customs that he was living under. But from a political point of view, you understand that politician, if he'd have, you know, did what the people probably really and truly wanted to do, they would have voted against him. He couldn't have got elected. But I think that's why you take the legislature. The legislature won't reapportion itself. The tax assessors won't reassess the property. The public officials would not bring about integration of school. They had rather the federal courts do it than do it themselves, because they can then cuss the courts for doing it. The job will be done. They won't get any of the blame for it. And when it's all over, the people are satisfied with it anyway. And probably what they wanted all the time. Except in some counties. Now, you take the counties where it's 85% black now, and that's a serious problem. There's no solution to the problem there. I don't see it. Not anytime soon. White people are fleeing Macon County. They're sitting out and fleeing because they are worried about not having good law enforcement and not having protection. You have a lot of absentee ownership of land now in those counties. People are just flat getting out because they're afraid. But in a county like Tallapoosa, where you have 40%, Montgomery has 40% black, this thing has taken place without any real difficulty. And I think that deep down inside, the average fellow Probably glad it's over. I'm glad that that's over, at least to that extent. I understand the problem in a place where you got, say, 85% or 90% blacks on a school. A lot of folks don't want to send their kids over there.
Would you go back if you could? Turn it back?
No. I think that'd be a mistake. The first year I was Attorney General, a group of us met in Birmingham. Joe Johnston, prominent folks, and Lieutenant Governor Bowdell, we met in Birmingham and had a little strategy meeting to try to, sort of plot a course. And this was 1955. And everybody there agreed that there was no way by which you could justify a segregated system under our Constitution, and that ultimately we would lose the legal battle. But that the thing to do to get the people to adjust to the thing gradually without violence and difficulties was to fight a delaying action in the courts, which is what we did. And we did it, and we did it for 8 years, and we did it fairly successfully. But this had to happen, and it's better that it's over. It had to happen.
What was the political effect back in 1958 of the whole Little Rock situation?
Well, you see, at the time of the Central High School thing in Little Rock, Paulus was the governor out there.
Right.
And
when you were Attorney General here, this was in 57, and next year you were running for governor, and what did that do insofar as, how did that affect political attitudes in this state?
This became the major issue. Forced integration by the federal courts became the major issue in that campaign. No question about it. That was it. And that Little Rock thing played right into our hands. We used that Little Rock thing as a perfect example of what we had to fight here in Alabama, you see. And being the Attorney General and being in the thick of the fight and having control of the headlines every day, I had the issue. That was it.
What would have happened if, at Little Rock, if they just desegregated there in 57?
Voluntarily?
Voluntarily. Or at least under court order, but, without the federal troops coming in, without the confrontation. If Faubus had said, okay, I'm going to bring out the National Guard, I fear we might have some violence, but we're just going to keep the schools open and see that there's no violence. We're going to keep the peace. And if they had pulled it off that way.
Well, I think this would probably have weakened the struggle to some extent, but not enough to have made any great difference at that time, I don't think, because this was a real issue here. And, of course, you take Faubus and Barnett, Patterson and Allman, and some of us, we sort of worked real informally sort of together, sort of looked upon as the folks that were fighting the battle. And then later Wallace, you see. Wallace, after he realized what beat him, and he changed his tune a little bit after that 58 race, as you know.
But the Little Rock
changed his tune a whole lot after that.
Yeah.
But the Little Rock thing had the effect of just greatly intensifying emotions?
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, it really did. I sent a man over there. I sent an assistant attorney general over there.
At what stage?
When they were getting ready to send the troops in there, and while the troops were there, I sent a man over there simply to observe, because we anticipated facing the same thing. Ultimately, we want to learn. See,
this was not before the Faubus actually called out the guard.
No, it was after. It was after, or simultaneously with it. I remember when he came back, we held a press conference. This was a headline, of what was happening in Arkansas. This was a big thing, no question about it. Big thing. Of course, I knew all the time that ultimately, down the road, that we were going to get in deep trouble with this thing. But at all times, it was my policy, and the policy of those around me, and those that I sought advice from, that it would always be legal. That it would always be on top of the table, and it would be done in the courts, and that we would never be a party to anything that was illegal. And if ultimately we could not avoid a United States Supreme Court decision, that we would comply with it, that this was always our thinking. Never did we vary from that. I think probably I would have gone as far as Governor Wallace and standing in the door. I don't think I would have gone that far, issued an order closing it up and locked the place up and forced them to open it over my objection, because then I could blame the federal court for it and get the onus off of me politically. After all, the minute you get in the office, you start thinking about re-election. This is not good, but this is usually the way people are. And you want to try to keep your public image good so that you'll have a chance to be reelected.
But, all right, how about today? What's the effect now if you were to run again for governor? Would that record be an asset or a liability?
Be a liability, because I would go in with a solid Negro block vote against me. A vote which we did not have to that extent at that time. And you see now they are all registered now. Just about all of them are registered. And many of them are registered, in the Black Belt areas particularly, that can't read and write under that Voting Rights Act. It makes no difference. And the leadership, the black leadership would whoop up that opposition to me. It would be formidable. So you see, I would go in with having to have all the blacks, having to have all the whites to win, to have any chance to win. And this is hard to do. So my biggest liability today, politically, as far as making a comeback is concerned, is because of what I did and what I had to do. I had no choice. I had to do it.
Well, I understand that you recently attended a dinner for a Republican congressman here.
Yeah, that's strictly personal.
Would, if you were to run again, would you consider running as a Republican?
No.
Would you do that?
No, I'm a Democrat. That's purely personal. Bill Dickinson is a close personal friend of mine, a man of which I admire tremendously. And you need to get this, and he's responsible for getting my son into West Point. And you just can't forget these things. Now this is, I'm a member of the Democratic Party. I always have been. I've never been a Republican. However, in the case of Bill Dickinson, I'd vote a split ticket, and have and will again. I would vote a split ticket then.
What do you think will happen politically in Alabama after George Wallace leaves the state scene?
Well,
let's assume he runs for the Senate in 1970.
Be a wide open affair. Just a wide open thing with a multitude of candidates. Now one of the unfortunate things in Alabama is we are a one-party state. And we still are.
Do you see it remaining that way?
I don't see any real signs at the present time that the Republican Party is going to get any much stronger than it is right now. This is unfortunate. As I know y'all, being in y'all's field, you'll agree with me on that. We need to be a two-party state, a real viable two-party state. But I don't see any change on the horizon in the immediate future. Alabamans have just grown to be Democrats. But it'll be a knockdown, drag-out affair. And, it's a popularity contest in Alabama. I think Mr. Key says that in his book. In Alabama, it's not a party fight for governor. It's a personality thing. So you'll have maybe as many as 15 candidates running for governor to take George Wallace's place if something were to happen to him. And it's hard to say who that might be. It might not be anybody that's presently being considered. It might be somebody completely new. More than likely would be.
How significant is the fact that we heard Wallace has more or less made his peace with what is loosely referred to as the Birmingham establishment?
Well, I don't know whether George has ever been enemies with those folks. It's, George had some close friends and supporters in the banking and insurance circles of Birmingham, and always has had.
Isn't it a little bit different for the newspapers over there to endorse him?
Yeah. Several of us have discussed that, as to why the Birmingham News has endorsed George Wallace. I guess finally they figured that if you can't win, you join them. I can't understand that. Although that is, the Birmingham News is the mouthpiece of big business and industry, no question about that. And I never had their support myself. I never able to get. But who are you talking about? You're talking about the insurance, certain insurance people, Liberty National Life people like that. That's the Samfords. You're talking about the Associated Industries of Alabama, the Alabama Mining Institute people, the mining people, the big industrialists, the banking people, and insurance people. That's who you're talking about. George had always had considerable support amongst that group. Considerable support. I know that they've been having some meetings up there prior to the election. Got some substantial contributions, I think, out of that. But lately, George had been doing a lot for them. In first place, a good bit of the state funds are going into Birmingham for improvement, particularly in the interstate system, which is giving them a network of expressways, which they didn't have, which they need very bad. Of course, Albert Brewer had a lot to do with letting all those contracts before he went out. But still, I'm satisfied George Wallace will get some credit for that. I don't see that they were ever really down on him too much. You think they were?
I don't know. I've just, you know, say I've heard it.
I have trouble lumping them all together and saying the big business, the big news. I don't think this means a great deal anymore. George, there's no question about it. He's got inroads into that crowd.
Now, doesn't that sort of raise questions about his
liberalism?
Liberalism.
Yeah. Well, he's got the image of a liberal down here. He's been able to carry it off real well.
How do you explain his hold on the state? Most politicians after an office 4 years or 8 years